On this Wednesday, we learned that the government was changing immigration forever. Bill C-12 will change the landscape of immigration and asylum seekers in Canada forever, and we're about to see the impacts. 200,000 people with claims sitting in the queue are about to get their fate decided. So stay tuned and join. We are so concerned about what we're doing on this front. People came to Canada with the intention of being residents. They paid into the system. They got educations. They funded tuitions. They took loans back home, and they got their parents to fund their education with the dream of becoming Canadian. And now all that is about to end. Those people who dropped into the asylum seeker category are about to be given their fate as this bill passes. Today on The Social Experiment, I'm speaking to Nir Rosenberg, counsel for CanadianVisas.com. Welcome, Nir.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
And I met Nir a few years ago through a friend, and it was over someone who needed help in the immigration field. And it's been a really good relationship, and I'm happy to have him on today. Nir was the past director, by the way, of the Canadian Association of Immigration Consultants, Professional Immigration Consultants, and which is really important because I know sometimes, you know, people, immigration sometimes gets a bad name. There's some characters out there, and I think Nir and another gentleman, Phil, spent a lot of time in their career kind of working towards making it reputable and getting people into a set of standards that help the industry, right, Nir?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, over many, many years, I would say.
Yeah, it's got to be 20 years since I met Phil. So,
yeah.
So today we're talking about asylum seekers. So, and this is a topic that's been in the news, in the newspapers. It's been talked about a lot, probably since, you know, mid to late 2024 and into the first quarter of 2025. And it really popped up, Nir, and we did a show on it yesterday with respect to people entering into the ports of Canada, right? The number of people coming over the border, walking and flying. And I wanted to start the show off today just kind of talking about some information and then kind of delve into students, because it's a big issue here and it continues to be. I did some research as I was prepping for the show. I was doing a lot of research and I came across some really interesting information and I wasn't aware of. And, you know, the IRCC, the Department of Immigration, Refugees, Citizenship of Canada, basically has a budget for 2024 and they spent it of $6.3 billion. So, you know, this is a bigger industry than I thought, to tell you the truth, when I got into it, you know, and it's interesting, you know, they, since 2023, they ramped up and they increased their funding. The IRCC funding ramped up and it hit its kind of peak in 24 when it went to the 6.3. And now the government of Canada is saying, okay, let's kind of try to slow it down a little and let's ratchet it back. And I threw a graph up on the screen that basically shows the expenditures, you know, going down, and they really want to kind of get it back to where it was kind of, I'd say, before COVID, the expenditure on the file. And then I said, okay, well, that's interesting, because how many asylum seekers do we have? So, you know, and where does the money go? So the money they spend on right now, the 6.3 in 2024, I looked into it and I said, okay, where do they spend their money? Well, they transfer a bunch of money to the provinces. So, you know, it was very interesting because they transfer roughly $3 billion to the provinces in 2024. Then they take about $167 billion and they transfer or give that or pay that to a set of people who are not on payroll, but they actually assist immigration. And then they have personnel of about $1.66 billion. So it massive, you know, a lot bigger. And it makes up immigration as an expenditure for the government makes up about 1.2% of the total budget. So, you know, a little different than what I thought. They're trying to kind of ratchet that down, as I mentioned, go to a lower spend, but they still want to spend $4 billion in 2025, this year, on asylum seekers. So that brought a lot of questions to my mind. And the first one that came up is, you know, who's submitting claims and where are they submitting claims? So I looked at, okay, how many claims are they getting? Well, they're getting about right now, if you look at the chart that's on your screen, July 2025, they're at just below 14,000 people making asylum claims a day, right? So 14,000. As you can see, most of those claims are either in Quebec or Ontario. Makes sense. Not a lot of claims happening anywhere else in Canada, because all the provinces are represented in this graph. And then I said, okay, well, are they coming in, like, where are they coming in to the country from? Because I thought they were all, you know, it's funny, Nir, I thought when they said asylum seekers, they basically were talking about people who were coming through, you know, a port through land or air, but it includes students and other people in the country.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah. And now we're seeing that more and more. There are really only a couple of different ways someone can really make a refugee claim. We have convention refugees, which are essentially individuals that have to go through the United Nations High Commission for Refugees outside of Canada. So they're individuals that can't get to Canada either by land, sea, or air, and they go through an interview process. They go through a lengthy process, and they get some. They get a certificate from the UNHCR that calls them a convention refugee, and then they make a claim for permanent residency through some sort of a sponsorship to Canada, or it's individuals that are, say, crossing the border, landing into one of the Canadian airports, or crossing the border through a land crossing, whether it's a secured land crossing or an unsecured land crossing. And through Canada and the U.S., I mean, we have the longest, say, unprotected border in the world, or unsecure border in the world. You got a lot of areas where there's no formal port of entry, where you are being interviewed by CBSA or Canadian Border Services agencies. And so you've got individuals that could come from Latin American countries, step into the United States, or even individuals that are American who are feeling insecure or fearing of persecution of some sort of reason in the United States. And so they come to the Canadian border. And we get a lot of calls from individuals like that who just say, you know, what if we don't want to live here anymore? What if we don't want to live in the United States and we want to go to Canada? Can we just go to the border and make a claim? Technically, yes. But there are things that that prevent them from doing that, like the Safe Third Country Agreement between Canada and the U.S. So there are individuals that do come into the country in different ways and make those claims. And then, of course, you touched on individuals that are in Canada, perhaps students or foreign workers or individuals that just, you know, came into Canada for some sort of reason, whether it was a visit, a study, a work permit, and they don't want to leave. And so they'll make a claim from inside the country.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that, you know, when I got into it, you know, you in the movies, you used to see, you know, the professional athlete or the ballerina who came to town and then claimed asylum. So you used to think to yourself, wow, that doesn't happen very often. But in a minute, we're going to get into it. You know, it's interesting because, you know, just quick story, you know, because, you know, I do a lot of building and I love to build things. There was kind of a mass immigration of Turkish trades. This happened, you know, almost around COVID. We started to see more people from Turkey coming in, wonderful stucco and concrete guys. And, you know, I love working with them. And as I was working with them, I asked them the story. How did you get here? What was your entry point? And it was interesting. So this is so crazy when you listen to their story. And I said, you guys should write a book. They would go to Mexico, right? They would come through, get smuggled into the U.S., and then travel all the way up to Quebec and then come into the country, right, and claim asylum. And I said, wow, what a journey you've been through. Like, that's crazy. Yeah. Well, we wanted to come to Canada. And I thought, you know, here's, and it's interesting because, you know, how times change. That was, you know, during the COVID times. Here now, we just put something out the other day in Ontario, or all throughout Canada. We are having a housing crisis, of course, and we are 500,000 workers, skilled workers short. So these guys who, and you know, it's funny, I called a friend of mine, a Turkish friend, and I said to him, I said, did you read that article? And he said, I read it this morning. He said, imagine if all these guys in this time, they would be begging for them to come in, but in order for them to get in at that time, they had to go through that journey, which you can imagine the perils of that journey, like just the risk of making it onto that border in Quebec, what must have been so large. So anyways, you got to, you know, the stories you hear are amazing. So absolutely. Then, you know, yeah. So then I jumped forward and I said, okay, you know, where people coming in through ports is what you mentioned, Nir, you know, basically which ports? So, you know, the interesting part when I just mentioned, you know, most of them are coming in through Quebec. So if you look at the graph, the brown part is basically Ontario and the blue part is Quebec, or the blue green part. You know, it's Quebec. And, you know, it's interesting. So Quebec, you know, not known for great border port control, right? Because I don't know, Munir, you probably don't, you might hear a little bit of it, but you know, it's kind of one of those things that we talk about, car thefts in Canada. And most of our cars that actually do get go through the Quebec port, a lot of them get shipped to Quebec and then out of the Quebec port. And it's become an issue sort of over time. But so they come through the Quebec port. And I said, okay, great. That must be where everyone's coming in. Then I flipped to the next page. And basically, people inside of Canada are mostly, or a big portion of them, are probably more than 50%, are actually in Ontario. So they're becoming asylum claimants inside of Canada in Ontario. So not Quebec. So then I said, okay. A few of them, you know, are Alberta. You see that in the chart. I thought a lot more would be on the East Coast, but no. So, and it made sense given the size. So I said, okay, well, that's kind of weird. How many people? Okay. So we probably have 5,500 people a day. And then I said, okay, what happened? What the next chart? I went, what happened to study permits and work permit holders? Well, then I remembered our immigration minister, Mark Miller, before Lena Diab got in. He said, you know, he came on TV and he said, listen, we're going to reduce the number of study permits and we're going to, you know, reduce the number of work permits. So then I went and took a look and lo and behold, it is true. They have actually moved quite aggressively to do that, as you can see from the chart that shows them declining. So I'm like, okay. So it's a kind of a weird graph, you know. We don't have as many study permits. We have a lot of people claiming asylum inside the country. And so then I asked my, you know, a few friends of mine, I said, what's going on? And they said, well, you know, take a look at the incoming asylum applications. So I went to the next chart, asylum applications, and lo and behold, there's 200,000 as of 2024 asylum applications. So it spiked up like from, you know, 21 coming out of COVID, 22, 23, 24. And it appears to be based on, you know, the few quarters in 25 to be increasing even more rapidly. So, you know what? And I asked then the question, I said, well, where the heck are they coming from? Who's making these claims? So then I went to the source documents in the IRC websites and stats websites. Well, you know, you got it. India, Haiti, Mexico, Iran, Nigeria, Bangladesh, Turkey, China, Afghanistan, that should be Colombia, and then Sri Lanka, Pakistan, and Guinea, right? So those were the top kind of leaders in Q1 2025 for people who were making claims. So that's where they were coming from. Now, you know, I'm going to get into it in a minute with you, but, you know, the reason, so like, you know, we talked about it a little yesterday. If I'm just coming across the border making asylum, you know, for the most part, I'm doing that because I need protection or I'm in fear. It seems like a very complicated process, that whole process. When I looked, I kind of delved into it for a few hours, and the amount of case law and information and diligence that goes. Give me a little bit of flavor of that, Nir, before we jump into students.
Well, yeah, as far as, you know, the numbers are concerned, I think that the increase in refugee claims overall are due to lack of ability to, from those in Canada, lack of ability to remain in Canada using a regular process. Those that are coming from outside of Canada, I would say probably over the last few years since COVID, probably relate to situations, you know, with volatile uncertainty around the world in different countries like Ukraine, like the Middle East. So we're seeing, you know, Canada be a little bit more open to certain refugees from different countries. And so they'll create certain policies around a very specific circumstance or around a very specific country. And so, you know, the numbers are increasing, but Canada's recently starting to kind of put a stop to it, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, they realized that they created this problem. And I truly believe that Canada created this problem over the last several years, since COVID, primarily, you know.
Yeah, they're bright. You know, the first quarter of 25, I think the minister came out and said, listen, we put some measures in. We seem to have decreased the year-on-year by 34%. And we're going to keep being diligent on asylum seekers coming through the port of entry, which, you know, I think that was a cry that we got when all the expenditures for hotels and onboarding came out and people were totally shocked at the numbers, to tell you the truth. So,
yeah, they do spend tens of thousands of dollars per individual on a refugee claim. Whether it's temporary housing, it's, you know, food, it's shelter, it's, clothing, they give grants, to individuals, and these refugees, don't necessarily, in there are certain cases they do, but 90% majority don't have to repay that back ever. And so when you're letting in so many refugees from so many different countries, you have to support them. A lot of these individuals that come in aren't, some of them are well educated but don't have English. Some of them are not very educated. Some of them just don't have the ability to integrate very fast or very fairly quickly into the Canadian society or into the Canadian market. And so you have to support them for a certain extent of time. And that's where we saw majority of the funding, the statutory funding going into resettlement of refugees, to resettle these refugees in the country.
Yeah, no, I know. And you know, the guys from True North, another podcast, they did I was watching it the other night. They estimate kind of each of those claimants cost the government roughly $81,000 by the time they get through the process. And I think that's what caught attention of a lot of Canadians, because they were like, you know, my income's, you know, average 61. And so they were like, we're spending $81,000 to onboard someone who has seeking asylum, and I'm only making 61 a year. And so there was a lot of comparisons going on, of course.
Yeah,
that's just human nature. But sure, I think that's flagged it for a lot of people. You know, so the next one that caught my, and this was something that really, hit home with me, right? And it's the people who have kind of entered into Canada under student visas, and they arrived, and you know, they're the people who, you know, left their hometown and their village or their city. They, you know, got their parents to mortgage lands that had been in their family for decades and hundred years. And a lot of these places that you saw on the list that we talked about a few minutes ago, you know, wealth is really generated by bequests, by transfer of land between or homes between families. So, you know, these are people that kind of came here, their parents, you know, mortgaged their lands, you know, sold their lands, worked hard all their lives to get them to come here and start their journey through education in the country, in Canada. And, you know, that kind of caught my eye because I started looking at the stats and I'm like, wow, a lot of these people have now are now claiming asylum. They've reached their end of their student visas. And quite frankly, the government said, well, you know, your path to potential PR here or citizenship here is, you know, going to come to an end. And they said, well, what am I going to do? So they panicked, I guess, and they jumped onto the asylum system. So
right.
You must see that. And I just want to get your take on it. And then share a few stats because I was actually shocked at the numbers.
Yeah, yeah, the numbers are high and they are going to go down and we believe very quickly. The issue around international students coming to Canada, I think, became, well, we didn't know it was going to be an issue. Or some people must have, but what they did was in and around the COVID era. When schools were struggling and Canada wanted to inject funding and money into these international schools. And a lot of these international schools are private schools. So, yes. You know, they needed to stay afloat during the COVID era. And so what Canada did was they basically kind of opened the doors to a lot of international students, over 500,000 annually. Well above that, actually. And what they did was they had brought in these students, they increased revenue, but what they did was they allowed so many people into the country when the country couldn't necessarily absorb that amount of people. You know, and that's where we find today the housing shortage, the healthcare crisis. You know, they are addressing this problem by essentially putting a little bit of a Band-Aid. Students came to Canada back around the COVID era. And when you come as an international student, you have the opportunity, if you qualify, if you study in the right program, if you study in the right length, you have the opportunity of getting something called a post-graduation work permit. And essentially, that's an open permit that is for a duration that is equivalent to the same of your study program for a maximum of 3 years. So if you study for a year, you get it for a year. If you study for three, you get it for three. These open work permits allowed these students to gain Canadian work experience, all within the pretense of a path to permanent residency. When these students acquired Canadian work experience, a lot of them went on to filing permanent residency applications through the federal programs, through provincial nominee programs. But there's a lot that it came to Canada a little bit after COVID in 2022, in 2023. And they're still students, and they're those that have graduated already now are in their first year or second year of postgrad work permits, and they're working towards their path, the path that they originally came to Canada on, thinking that that is what the path was going to be for them. And over the last year, we've seen a change in government, we've seen a change in policy, and what we've seen is the biggest factor is Canada reducing the number of immigrants overall, the number of permanent residency visas that they're going to admit or approve. Students are getting cut down. International foreign workers are getting less and less opportunities to come to work in Canada. There's many different reasons for how they're doing that. They're limiting employers on hiring foreign workers. They're refusing labor market impact applications. They're not allowing employers to file. So there's a lot of different ways that they're actually making this happen. But what they've done is they've closed the doors on a lot of those students that came in thinking they're going to have the opportunity. And so you've got individuals now that are working in Canada and their work permits are going to expire, you know, in 3 months or in 4 months. And they talk to immigration consultants or they talk to immigration lawyers or they read things online and they realize they don't have an opportunity to stay. So they get bad advice and they go and file a refugee claim. And so now we're seeing in the last, I want to say 6 to 12 months, we're seeing a higher number of international students requesting refugee, making refugee claims from inside the country. And that could also show us a correlation as to why the graphs are indicating majority are in Ontario. There's a ton of students in Ontario. A ton of students worked in British Columbia, moving to Ontario, worked in Quebec, studied in Quebec, couldn't find jobs, couldn't speak the language, moving into English speaking provinces. And so you were finding most of those claims made in these particular areas. But there are ways that Canada has actually tried to put a stop to this. So, you know, there are things in place that they're putting now and that they're trying to implement. And that's what they hope is going to reduce the number of refugee claims and essentially, you know, solve the problem that they actually caused about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, I remember, you know, it's interesting, you know, I remember going to events and parties and things, and you'd meet all these administrators from the different educational institutions, you know, and they're always sharp dudes and gals, and they were killing it, you know, they were doing very well, you know, they'd come out of COVID, the international tuitions were very high, so, and the programs were you know, a lot of them were not very good quality, personally, you know, that's my sort of opinion, but, you know, what you would see, they'd come in and do 2-year programs, quite frankly, they weren't great programs, a lot of the students didn't get a lot out of them, and then the students would be kind of stuck, right, they were here, and, you know, that, so in 2024, you know, the 200,000 that we had mentioned, we had about 171,000 claims of students. And then just year to date, we're over 30,000. So in 25. And I think you hit it right on the head, Nir. You know, it did cause some housing, healthcare, public issues that you know, still kind of linger and we're going through right now. You know, you see all the time, there's CBC's been running a bunch of videos about how housing insecurity is causing mental distress to international students. You know, they can't right now, you know, our rents went crazy for a while and now they've leveled out again, thank goodness, for some of these students, but still finding a place, getting set, you know, a safe, you know, well-built housing unit or apartment is very difficult now. And, you know, we're kind of running into a bubble on our condo market. So a lot of them have been lucky enough to kind of shift over and get into that market on rentals, but still a problem. So, you know, we hit it. So they capped the study permits at 550,000. And then, you know, we have a bunch of people coming in. I get it. How many of those people, you know, you're down in the U.S., so how many people of that group are coming from the U.S. given what's going there? Are you noticing any of kind of migration that way, whether it be from students or just, quite frankly, people who are on other political parties?
Yeah, we are. You know, yeah, you mentioned that I'm in the U.S. Yeah, so we're based in Canada, but we do also have a U.S. based office, and we do get a lot of individuals who call us in the last year or so, and also since the Trump presidency again, we get a lot of individuals who are fearing, you know, their life in. Essentially not being able to remain in the United States. The TPS program, you know, the Temporary Protected Status program in the United States, you know, Trump wants to end that, and he's placed essentially a temporary date when he's going to end that. And those policies are, you know, individuals are fearing that, right? I've got a lot of people that call us and say, you know, our TPS status is expiring. It's not going to be renewed. I don't want to go back to Haiti. I don't want to go back to Cuba. I don't want to go back to, you know, Colombia. Where do I go? What can I do? Is there a path for me to Canada? And a lot of these people don't necessarily have a path to Canada either, and for different reasons. But they end up resorting to asking, what if I go to the Canadian border and I ask to go in as a visitor and I make a refugee claim. Technically, they can do that. But I believe that Canada is now also looking at solving that problem. So there are measures that Canada is putting in place. They're trying to now with two bills, C-12 and Bill C-2. And those bills, when they do get royal assent, they will become law, and Canada will be able to stop and prevent, individuals from coming in, whether it's from the United States or it's individuals that are in Canada making claims. That's kind of going to go away. But even when that does go away, that doesn't solve the problem right away. You have a backlog in the refugee claims system, in the Immigration Refugee Board, hundreds of thousands of cases. It takes well over a year to get your case heard. But you know what they do? In the interim, they grant them a work permit. So an international student whose work permit is going to expire in a week goes and makes a refugee claim, gets an open work permit for another year or two, mm-hmm. and then works wherever they want until that becomes a dead end. But when that becomes a dead end, or when their refugee claim is heard and it's denied because it's not a substantiated claim, they end up leaving the country. So it's an inevitable situation that that they don't necessarily have an opportunity to overcome with the options that exist today.
Right. So I get you. So the loophole gets them, I guess the backlog gets them a little extra time. So it gets them a Correct. Year or two. They get a year or two. They get the letter. It's been an issue probably for another show, but they get a letter, and then we're struggling now with some issues of finding people. So
right.
Whether or not the tracking is very good or whether they moved around a lot, but getting them, finding them and making sure they leave the country is becoming a more critical issue as time goes on. And you're now starting to read about it more and more. And I don't know, that to me is a resource issue, but, probably trying to understand is that given the fact that we've gone and secured our border more on the request of the president, President Trump, are we now struggling with resource issues from that perspective? So that's probably a question we have to ask them, but I assume that probably the answer is yes on that front. We talked about housing, the strain on the public service, whether it be healthcare, and asylum seekers, join in the system, they get the social services and the healthcare of a normal, an average Canadian, which is something we all understand. Colleges are gone. A lot of the colleges that popped up have disappeared now. So, they're kind of gone by the by. Do we stop become a haven for people to educate? And is that are you seeing people still interested? Are they still wanting to come and explore Canada? Or is that slowing at such an extent you're not getting as many requests or, people looking for information?
Yeah. So we are seeing a steady interest in coming to study in Canada. But it has gone down in the sense that when we submit applications for a study permit, we get a lot more refusals today. So we're getting a lot more refusals, and it explains why the numbers are down. They just don't grant study permits enough. The schools that used to, the private ones that used to accept pretty much any student from any country are now, slowly dwindling and going away. And it's because they don't have the funding to stay alive. But what we're seeing is also students who call me, and I know that other immigration consultants who I talk to are experiencing the same thing, is that the students are asking, okay, if I come to Canada as a student, if I do get a work permit a study permit, because I've got, a good education background, I've got great funds, I've got, the ability to study, and I've got a great path. Is there a path for me to remain in Canada after I get my PhD, after I get my master's degree, after I've studied? And we're not talking about individuals that are coming in to study a one-year graphic diploma program at a private college. We're talking about individuals that really want to contribute, individuals that have very good, promising possibilities with a career in Canada, in the health sciences, in the mathematics, in the engineering world. These individuals want to rely on a path forward, on a path to becoming permanent residents. And when there's no clear path, they start to think, why should we come and invest all of this money into Canada? Because it's not very cheap to go to school in Canada. As an international student, you're paying at least 2 to 3 times the cost of any Canadian citizen or Canadian permanent resident. And on top of that, you've got to pay housing and you've got to prove that you have financial support for yourself for that first year. And in the past, and it goes up every single year, but in the past, one individual on a study permit required somewhere around $11,000-$12,000 to show that they had for the first year of studies as financial support from themselves, call it settlement funds, in addition to the study program tuition fees and all that stuff. They wanted to see that you had at least, at one point it was 11 grand, then it was 13,000. Now, 2 years ago, it was about 18. Now it's $22,000. It went from last year being $20,000 to exceeding $22,000. That's another 10% increase. So every year, they're making it more and more difficult for students from different countries to qualify. It's not enough that you are getting into a great tier university. It's not enough that you have straight A's. It's not enough that you want to go live in a rural community and study at that rural college. It's not enough. You have to show that you have the money. And a lot of people will say, well, if I'm going to have to go and spend all this money into a school in Canada and invest all this effort, what do I get in return? I'm going to study here and then have to leave. What's the point? So they start looking at different countries around the world. They look at Europe. They look at Australia. They look at these countries where they do see a path to becoming permanent. Some even actually go to the United States because there are ways in the United States for them to benefit from a work permit after. What's happening in Canada now is that they're trying to put this temporary band-aid, and what they're doing is that they're doing it so quickly that it's going to take time to reduce these numbers, and it's going to take time to solve the problem they caused back in 2020, 2021, 2022 by eliminating these students, by eliminating the foreign workers. It's going to bring those numbers down. It will take time, but it will bring it down. But what it's doing is it's already also hurting our population overall. We're not going to be able to have the population that we need to sustain the labor market. There's a lot of employers across Canada that have no way of hiring and filling positions because they rely on foreign workers. There's the restaurant industries, the hotel industries, the tourism industry. They rely on these temporary foreign workers. They rely on these international students. And the problem that they're trying to solve I can appreciate the problem, but what they're doing is they're using there's a Bill C-2 and Bill C-12. And what these bills are doing is that they're proposing essentially to limit the number of refugee claims that are made from inside of Canada. So for example, if you came to Canada after June 6th of 2020, it's retroactive. So if you came to Canada after June 6th of 2020, and you stayed in Canada for effectively at least a year in the last five, right, 2020 to 2025, you can't make a refugee claim. If you do, your refugee claim will get thrown out. So they're just basically saying, if you came in anytime after June 6th of 2020, up until now, if you make a claim and you've been in Canada for at least a year, you can't make that claim. So if you were a student, you had a post-grad work permit, you completed a study program, whatever your case was, you came to Canada as an international worker, as a temporary foreign worker, you worked for a year, worked for 2 years, now you see no path, you can't file a refugee claim. You can file it, it'll get thrown out. They're not going to process it, right? So that's what they're doing as it relates to the refugee claims, because they've realized that the refugee numbers are going up and that there's no way to control that. So they're just going to say, we're going to throw it out. You know, if you came in during this period of time, you stayed for this amount of time, we're going to throw it out.
So, yeah, wow. So interesting, because I didn't get that. So the bill's passed, right?
No, the bills in the House, they're working to essentially get it to pass and get it through royal assent. But there's a BC2, and Bill C2 essentially proposes the solution, right, with the refugee claims. But it's got a lot of privacy laws in there as well, allowing essentially CBSA to do a lot. And that means to check people's mail, check electronic communication, and do investigative measures per se. And so because that is causing a lot of delays, they've introduced another bill, Bill C-12, which basically pulls out the refugee solution into its own separate bill. And that's going to be something that's going to be passed expeditiously. And then once that's passed, yeah, the rules for refugees will essentially become law much sooner. And then that is what's going to be the new kind of norm. If you're in Canada today, you won't be able to file a refugee claim. There are other ways of, right, of potentially staying in Canada, maybe a humanitarian and compassionate application, right? An H&C consideration. And that's a whole different story. But that particular application doesn't grant you a work permit for the year. It doesn't grant you a temporary stay in Canada. It's an application that kind of happens in the background, but you don't get an actual authorization to stay in Canada while that's being processed. That's the difference.
So, Nir, does that mean, just so I understand, so it's retroactive back to 2020, and if you've stayed in the country at that point for a year,
correct,
you can't, and you've claimed asylum, so you're a refugee, you'll be told right away. So that bill passes, and then a bunch of letters, so like almost like a mass, those, so, you know, those 200,000 people that we're talking about, probably a lot of them are going to get the letter like it's done.
Once the bill receives royal assent, yeah, they'll pass the law and they'll retroactively apply it and they'll throw out every claim. The only ones that will be allowed to go through are the ones that it, so for example, if you came to Canada illegally, like let's say you crossed the border from the United States, came to Canada illegally, you crossed through one of the borders that you didn't get interviewed by a CBSA officer, and you don't claim within 2 weeks, they'll throw out your claim as well. So you can't come in illegally, stay for a year and then claim. You have to claim within 2 weeks. And you can claim it at a CBSA office. You can claim it at the airport. You can claim it, you know, at the border. You can claim it wherever you want. You can actually be in Canada and go to an actual immigration enforcement center office and say, "I want to make a refugee claim." But you got to do that within 2 weeks, and that's assuming the bill passes.
Right. So the interesting bill passes. The interesting thing is, so those people get the letter, but the people who made it up to a border or came in through an airplane, claimed asylum, they're going to sit in the process. So they're not going to be impacted the same way because they're not.
Correct.
Are they? Yeah. So they're not impacted. So the port asylum seekers will not be impacted by it, but the education, the people who came for a work permit and did it will.
Yeah. It's anyone that's been in Canada for more than a year and hasn't claimed. They, if they claim now, let's say the bill passed today, if they claim tomorrow, they won't, it'll be thrown out because they won't accept that. It was between the last, you know, it's retroactive. It's going all the way back to 2020. If you came in 2020, in 2019, then you can still make the claim. They're going based on June 6th of 2020 as the retroactive date. So it's that quick fix to try to solve the problem that they are essentially causing by limiting the options for international students. You know, the limited number of immigration programs, the difficulty in claiming points towards express entry, which is the federal system to apply for permanent residency. It's a point system where you gain points based on different human capital factors, work experience, age, education, etc. So those are the programs that those individuals who came to Canada back in 2020, 2021, 2022 relied on.
Right. But aren't we, and this is where my mind is kind of, my confusion with this. The people came, they, back home, they mortgaged their land, they came here, they spent the time, they paid the money to the government, they supported these new educational programs that popped up, they supported traditional programs, they paid rent, they bought food. So they've been in the economy, right? These are the people that came with money, right? Came here. We didn't give them money. They came and gave us money. And so now we're going to be saying to them, go home. right? We're exiting them out. And we're going to be, aren't we incentivizing the people who are coming, you know, they're claiming asylum for other reasons, whether it be protection or other issues in their home countries. But we're kind of, it just seems a little backward to me. It seems, quite frankly, we should be, in my mind, we should be trying to figure out some solution for these people and to fit. So if we need trades or if we need jobs, we should be trying to give them almost first priority, first right to kind of say, hey, we have some stuff coming up. It might not be in your field, but if you're interested in doing it, whether it be in mining or whether it be in forestry or whether it be in skilled trades, isn't that where we need to, because that's where we need people right now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's absolutely true. But what happened is you had a shift in policy in government, and you have a liberal government that wants to please the Canadian population. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when they ran for office, they basically, you know, listened to the Canadian public, who said housing shortage, healthcare crisis, too many international workers, too many international students, we got to cut it down. So they're putting this fix to cut down all of these people. But what they've done is they don't, in my opinion, it's not a very smart way to do it, because when you apply, like, for example, the foreign worker program relies on, you can't just come into Canada and apply for a work permit, right? You can't just apply for a work permit from whatever country and come to work here. You have to have, 99% of the time, you have to have a job offer. And that job offer has to be pre-approved by the government under a department called Employment and Skills Development Canada, ESDC. Employment Social Skills Development Canada, whatever. This department reviews job offers, and they look at whether or not the position that is being requested to fill by the employer is going to create a positive, negative, or a neutral effect in the Canadian labor market. And if it creates a positive or a neutral effect, typically it gets approved. If it gets a negative effect, it gets denied. So they do an evaluation, they assess, takes several months. You have to prove advertising, you got to prove you couldn't find a Canadian to fill the position, etc. Mm-hmm. What they've done last year, almost a year ago now, is, or maybe just a year ago now, just over a year ago, I believe it was September of 2024, they implemented a policy called refusal to process. They love using this term, refusal to process. And what they do is they put a blanket refusal to process policy that says, in this particular instance, they said, if any employer is located in a region that has a unemployment rate of 6% or more,
okay,
we will not allow them to apply for what's called a low-wage application. So they have a threshold. And for example, I remember the number in my head in Ontario, so I'll mention Ontario. Ontario has a threshold of $36 an hour today. If your position that you're offering a foreign worker is below $36 an hour, that's considered a low-wage application. Now, which employers are going to fill these jobs? So we're talking restaurants, we're talking hotels, we're talking ski resorts, we're talking bakeries, we're talking manufacturing facilities, we're talking the fishing industry in different parts of Canada. These industries are lacking the workers. There's a shortage of these workers in Canada. Agricultural workers also. So you've got a lot of employers that are saying, we need to hire these people. We will do whatever it takes to hire them. But there's a cap to the number of dollars per hour that they could spend on a worker. And they can't afford to pay $36 an hour to put them into a high-wage application. I spoke to an individual today from a pharmacy in Ontario, in Cambridge, Ontario. And this pharmacy has three different locations. And in their Cambridge location, they're trying to hire a pharmacy, what do they call it, a pharmacy technical assistant. The prevailing wage in Cambridge for a pharmacy technical assistant is $20.50 an hour. And right now they're paying someone that is already working there about $22 an hour. So they're willing to say, you know what, we want to keep this guy, we'll pay him more. But mm-hmm. they didn't know that there was a refusal to process policy, which means you can't file an LMI application for a low-wage application. You can't do that. You have to put them into a high-wage application because Cambridge falls into a region of 6% or more of unemployment. And so what ends up happening is you tell the employer, look, The only way you're going to be able to keep this guy working beyond, say, February when his work permit's expiring is to apply for a new LMIA, but you got to bump and promise to pay $36 an hour at the minimum rate. So this employer is telling me I've got to go from $22 an hour to $36 an hour. That's a problem. And now this gentleman has already worked in Canada for 2 years in that position and now has no option, essentially, if the employer can't afford to bump the raise, can't stay in Canada to work. What are they going to do? They could then talk to someone who's going to give them bad advice and say, go file a refugee claim, right? And so that's why we're seeing a lot of these refugee claims, not just from students, but also from temporary foreign workers. And I have clients in different parts of Canada, Manitoba, Alberta, very large restaurant chains that you and I are very familiar with, who are potentially laying off employees, Canadians, because they can't keep their doors open the 24-hour shift that they need to, because they just don't have the people. And they're not located in Toronto, where you've got 6 million, 7, 8 million people. They're located in rural places in Alberta or in Manitoba or in Saskatchewan or in BC in the mountains. There's no workers there. And so the blanket refusal to process on the temporary foreign worker program causes a major issue on employers in Canada. It's not very smart, in my opinion, to blanket a refusal to process. There are certain exemptions. They will say we'll allow it if it's a healthcare or if it's a caregiver position or if it's and that's another thing. I mean, they limit the exemptions to very specific industries, which, in my opinion, based on my understanding of who my clients are, that's not where the problem is. The problem isn't necessarily in healthcare to keep the nurse. It's in the majority of the industries, and they've done so many things, to limit foreign workers that it's, I know we were talking about refugee claims, but I'll give you this, that, just recently, in January, they implemented a new policy. If you're working in Canada and you're not working in a particular occupation that we put on a particular list, you can't bring your spouse to Canada to work. So your spouse can't accompany you. So there's so many restrictions that they've placed, and all within a matter of the last 10 to 12 months. They removed the points that an international student who has a job offer from an employer with a valid labor market impact assessment, with that valid document, they've removed the 50 points that they would receive. So anyone that had the number of points they needed in order to qualify to become a permanent resident, all of a sudden dropped by 50 points, possibly putting him into outside that window of getting an invitation. So they've put in so many measures in place overnight, call it, right, in order to solve this problem that they caused 5 years ago. And we're going to see this problem kind of linger for the next couple of years. It'll reduce the numbers for sure, but it's going to linger, and it's going to linger for a few years before Canadian population realizes that, in fact, this particular, very quick response may not have been the correct response necessarily.
Yeah, it's going to create a labor shortage. You can just see it, right? Because en masse, we're going to have a mass exodus. And then, again, will a lot of Canadians even do those jobs? Right? That's another issue. And then, like you said, it's frustrating. And it's frustrating because, are we honoring I call it an ethical obligation. The people that came on the study visas and the educational, visas and went to school here, they committed to the country. They came here. They spent money. It's the way it's supposed to work. It's how our grandfathers and our fathers all came. They brought money. They invested. They bought homes. They rented. They got on their feet. That their families were here or relatives, they sponsored them. That's how we started off, and that's what it's supposed to be. And just because we've hit a bubble now. And it's more of a reallocation of resources right now. It's sitting down and saying, where are we short? Where are we not? And then giving those people priority to make it through the system. And that's where I'm so frustrated. Nir, I really appreciate it. Hey, before we leave today, I wanted to, and you mentioned something when we were just setting up for the show, and Yeah, your website, you guys have automated it. You talk a little bit about what you've done, and I know people have a lot of questions, and you know, you guys are a real resource, and I think, you know, just talking about how you're using some systems to answer a bunch of questions that people have.
Sure. Thank you. So we just launched our brand new site on CanadianVisas.com. So it's CanadianVisas with an S.com. And we are working to implement now a new system where individuals can come on our website and complete an assessment on any options that they're looking for in Canada, whatever visa they're looking for. So they'll be able to select, you know, what type of visa they're looking to apply for. And if they're in Canada or if they're outside of Canada and they're looking to apply for permanent residency, they can fill out all their details, their age, their education level, if they've taken an English test, if they've got work experience, they can list all of those details. And our system would take all of that information and spit out essentially a result for them to be able to download instantly. And that's going to give them a full report on any of their immigration options in Canada, whether they qualify in any of the federal system that Canada has today, the Federal Express Entry System, the Canadian Experience Class programs, or any of the provincial programs, if they have job offers in Canada or not. So we look at all of that data, and we give out a PDF that basically gives them all of their options. We're going to be implementing an option on our website for individuals to apply for visas essentially on their own. And if they need any assistance, they can always reach out to us. They can hire us for consultation. We highly, highly, highly recommend, you know, I can't stress this enough, and they don't have to call me specifically. They can call anyone. But as long as they call someone who is authorized, who's an authorized representative, there's a lot of individuals from overseas that don't have the right information. They go on Google, they start typing, they get some, you know, Joe Schmo who's going to tell them some of their options, and it's not true. They're going to give them some false information, some false hope. You know, there's a benefit to hiring an immigration professional, whether it's an immigration consultant or a lawyer. There's a benefit in talking to someone who understands the rules, who understands the policies, who understands the shift and changes. Because if somebody gives you advice today, that answer may not necessarily apply tomorrow. And so we highly recommend, I strongly encourage, they can call me, they can reach out to us by email, they can reach out to us by phone, they could go on our website, they can get some information there, they can fill out the assessment form. But talk to someone who's experienced in the immigration world, who's got, you know, a license to do so, because there's a lot of ghost consultants out there that prey on individuals in these particular situations, those are in Canada, who feel like they'd have no place to go, who feel like they're as a dead end, and they are willing to do anything in order to stay in Canada. It's not always the right solution. We recommend to talk to someone so that you get the right advice.
No, thank you, Nir, and I really appreciate your time. So thank you for today, and we're going to be following up with some more shows on immigration, have Nir back on, answer some more questions. So send your questions if you have along to us on our website. We'll use it for our next shows. And please subscribe and follow. So thank you again.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.